I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
I want you to know that the mothership has landed.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
What's up, my brother? I want permission to come aboard the mothership.
Asking permission to join a sports talk spaceship? Well, we're all a little crazy. The mothership has connected.
The mothership.
Let's go aboard.
Happy Tuesday to you, North America. The mothership has connected. Welcome aboard. It's the 3-hour Chaos Theory Kegger. GA with you from the CBS Sports Radio studios in New York City, broadcasting to affiliates nationwide and north of the border. Anchorage to Atlanta, Chicago to Shreveport, Kalamazoo, and Waterloo. We are on the air.
Are they listening, D.A.? Everything we saying, D.A., everything.
And as always, we come to you live from the Quicken Loans studios. National mortgage lender Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. How's everybody doing? Thanks so much for joining us. Big show coming up for you. It's a Trash Tuesday. So what are you trashing? Who are you trashing? We take the trash out coming up here in about 35 minutes from now. So be forewarned, we're going to start trashing our stuff, and you can trash yours by hitting us up on the phones at 855-212-4227 or on Twitter, DA on CBS. We'll read your trashes throughout the morning. Also coming up this hour, is the Mexico City Monday Nighter already a disaster? Next hour, Tommy Bowden, former college football coach, college football broadcaster, is going to drop on by the show here, analyst now, in about an hour from now. We'll talk about the college football playoff. Rankings will come out tonight. Did Shohei deserve the American League Rookie of the Year honor that he got? Do we have more evidence that Kevin Durant is going to leave Golden State in the offseason? And is Floyd Mayweather getting free footballs in the end zone a disgrace of disgraceful proportions? It's all coming up this morning here on the show. I mentioned before how you could get involved. We encourage you to do so, but we begin last night on Monday Night Football. Been a bad season for the Giants. Whew. It has been an ugly, now forget it, it's been an oogly season for the G-Men. Last night it was kind of more of the same. An ugly game for the early parts. Although by the end, finally we had a bit of a comeback. But when you look at the offensive numbers, passing-wise, the Giants and Eli Manning, less than 190 yards. Nearly losing to Nick Mullins and a 49ers team that had only 2 wins. The New York Giants came into the season expecting a playoff run. Well, that clearly is not happening. But they trailed 20-10 last night. Once again, seemed all was lost, and yet Eli Manning orchestrates the comeback, ties things up by the end of the third quarter, and then goes ahead on the game-winning touchdown drive with under a minute to play, hitting Sterling Shepard of the end zone to win 27-23. And Eli has looked awful this season. Doesn't help that the offensive line's been shaky. Doesn't help that the defense has given up big plays. Doesn't help that it's a brand-new head coach. Doesn't help that Odell Beckham is volatile. Doesn't help that pressure has been on this team and they've been collapsed. But Eli himself, as I've said before, is not the only Giants problem. He's just the biggest Giants problem. And last night leads another comeback. And these are the types of moments that make you wonder, how is it possible Eli could be so bad? So bad! And yet, when the chips are down, time after time after time, leading big comeback drives late in games. Over the last couple of years, the only guys with more fourth quarter comeback wins are two guys going to the Hall of Fame and two of the greatest ever, Peyton Manning, Drew Brees. I mean, think about that list. Peyton Manning, Drew Brees, Eli Manning. How is it possible that Eli can look so bad? Because his lows are way lower than Peyton and way lower than Brees and way lower than Brady and way lower than the other great quarterbacks of his era. Way lower than Rodgers, Roethlisberger, Rivers. Eli's low is the lowest of those guys. But he also has high highs like last night. So how is this possible? How can Eli look so bad and yet pull rabbits out of the hat? Why is Eli so good in those moments and yet so bad in others? It is where we begin. It's your cold open.
Manning in a shotgun set. Barkley to his left. Manning back to throw. He looks left. He throws left. Caught for the touchdown by Sterling Shepard. And the Giants mob Shepard. 53 seconds to go, and the Giants are up 26-23 with the extra point pending.
Yeah, just a combination. Hit a big play early on to Evan down the sideline. So that, you know, it's good when you get those 30-yard chunk plays to kind of get some momentum. Now you're getting close to field goal range. And then had a great play to Saquon.
I don't believe it.
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic, heartrending.
It's DA's top story.
Here he goes.
It's your cold open.
Bob Papa, Giants radio on the call. Eli after the game. Saquon came over to Eli on the sideline and said, "Man, you've been doing this since I was like 12. Saquon said, "That's Eli. When he's in one of those moments, he's a heck of a player. You know why when you're around him, when you're young and you're watching him on TV, you're like, wow. When's the last time any of us said wow about Eli Manning? Now, he was helped out by some broken coverages. Ingram wide open. Saquon Barkley makes a great catch and then runs through traffic. And then the throw to Sterling Shepard's not really online. Shepard makes a great catch diving in the end zone. So it wasn't a perfectly executed drive by Eli Manning. But here's the thing. Eli, his demeanor is perfect in those moments. That's his 41st comeback fourth quarter win. 41 times he has done that. 41 times he has led a game-winning drive in the fourth quarter. And you see that kind of blank stare on his face? You see that Eli face that we make fun of? You hear his quotes and you go, is there any emotion in your voice? Oh, yeah, you know. We just had a game-winning drive. That's the personality quirk that makes him great in that moment. I don't think he views a first quarter drive much differently than he does a fourth quarter drive. That's when all the blood flows out of his body. I think he just has this personality quirk where nothing ever rattles him. And the problem is when you're 1-6 and you need the best effort to save your season, Eli doesn't give it to you because he doesn't view that any differently than he views in a Super Bowl with a game-winning drive. It is what has made Eli great in those two playoff runs. When the chips are down and you're on the road and you're playing elite competition and the odds are stacked against you, he does not feel pressure. He is somehow totally oblivious to the crucible that is those moments and those pressures and those situations. And last night, granted, it is not the Super Bowl against the Patriots. It's not an NFC Championship game at Lambeau. But it's just another fourth quarter where, okay, boop, 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 take my lunch pail, got my helmet, and let's go to work. Boop, 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 boop. And those are the things that drive you crazy about Eli. Because he has those moments in the biggest spots, but you only get those biggest spots a couple of times a season. You know, you've got to be great like Drew Brees and Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady. You've got to be great those days, like 14 out of the 16 weeks of a season. Not 2 out of the 16 when Eli is. You know, he's got like 3 times a season where you're like, wow, yeah. But the other 13, you're going, no, you're terrible. But therein lies why Eli may end up in the Hall of Fame. Now, I would not put Eli in the Hall of Fame, and here's why. I think it's a numbers game. You've got to put Peyton Manning in. You've got to put Tom Brady in. You've got to put Aaron Rodgers in. You've got to put Drew Brees in. Those are 4 guys of his generation, of his era, that have got to be in. And then you're talking about Roethlisberger, Rivers, and Eli. Well, the Roethlisberger, to me, gets in over Eli Manning because he's got as many championships, went to another Super Bowl, but has put up huge numbers and has run this amazing offense much deeper into his career, and still the Steelers are going to AFC championship games and winning divisions and deep into the playoffs, where Eli has completely fallen off and the Giants become trash. So then that's 5 quarterbacks of his era. I think Eli gets in over Phillip Rivers because of Eli's postseason success, because of his longevity and his durability. But to me, can you put 6 quarterbacks in from the same era? Plus, by the way, we've already put in Brett Favre, but let's even say that that's a little earlier than the rest of these guys. That's between 1998 and 2018, a 20-year category. You're going to put in 6 quarterbacks? That's a lot to me, which is why I would let Eli be the first one out, if you will. But he may get in because of what we saw last night. When it matters most, it might as well be week 2 against the Bengals. 855-212-4CBS. 855-212-4227. Twitter, DA on CBS. As a dyed-in-the-wool Giants fan, are you excited for the win last night, Mraz, or disappointed because it hurts the draft pick stock?
I'm never going to be disappointed after a win. It's the first time I woke up with a little bounce in my step. All right, Giant win last night, but it just kind of makes me cringe a little bit because I go on social media and I read all the Giant fans, you know, stop with the we're back, stop with the, I told you on Eli Manning.
Who could be saying we're back?
Believe me, I have read quite a few this morning.
We're back after beating Nick Mullins?
There are Giant fans who think the team is going 9-7.
Not
a joke. I'm telling you the truth. I follow plenty on Twitter. Or at least think it's possible in a bad NFC East to figure this out. That stuff makes me cringe. They won a game. You could argue they had an easy schedule down the stretch, and maybe they weren't going to get the first overall pick. It's tough to root for losses, but please, it's hard to be excited. You could be happy, but you better not be excited.
How aggravating is it to see Eli do that in the fourth quarter, knowing how awful he has been the rest of the season?
Terrible. Now, the only thing I will say, if there was one silver lining of the whole thing, was that I will play devil's advocate. They added Jamon Brown, a guard from the Rams, and all of a sudden the right side of the line looked competent, and he needed a competent line, and there were still times with a competent line that Eli looked lost last night, and for me that's refreshing because it tells me that you can't just go, oh, it's totally the O-line and Eli would be fine. I watched that and go, well, Eli still kind of threw for under 200 yards. It wasn't that great, and the O-line played really well last night, so it's still refreshing and reassuring that quarterback needs to be a change on this team going forward. I'm just so indifferent towards it. Great, we won. Woo!
Jamon Brown, he's the difference maker for the Giants.
Hey, little trivia question for you on the DA. There is one player in the NFL who's undefeated this season.
Jamon Brown?
Jamon Brownis.
No.
Yep. Was with the Rams. They cut him right before their first loss. Only game with the Giants, they won. Only player in the NFL to be undefeated this
year. So Jamon Brown is like 8-0 this season.
Yeah. Jamon Brown's having the best year of any NFL player.
The league MVP. When we come back here on the show, last night they couldn't have promoted next week's Monday Nighter anymore. In fact, it was almost like last night was next Monday night's pregame because next Monday night is Chiefs and Rams. Amazing, right? We get 2 of the best teams in football, perhaps a Super Bowl preview. And yet, it's a guaranteed disaster. We will tell you why next. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
too much fun with audio.
The main thing is, the main thing is playing the game. It's kind of like a tongue twister. I appreciate you, DA.
The DA Show on CBS Sports Radio.
As we always like to tell you, as DeMarcus Lawrence taught us, the main thing is keeping the main thing the main thing, and the main thing is playing the game.
Main thing is, and that's the main thing. The main thing is keeping the main thing the main thing, and the main thing is playing the game.
Wise words. Wise words. Welcome back, DA, with you here on CBS Sports Radio on a Trash Tuesday. Get us your trashes by hitting us up on Twitter, DA on CBS, Trash Tuesday, or dial us up at 855-212-4CBS. That's 855-212-4227. Remember, if you're outside of your normal listening area here for the DA Show, that's okay for CBS Sports Radio. You can also catch us on Sirius XM Channel 206. Last night's Monday night matchup was one to snooze through, Giants-Niners, but next Monday night is one that you have to watch. It's two of the best teams in football. You get to see Patrick Mahomes versus Jared Goff. You get to see two of the best offensive minds in the league in Andy Reid and Sean McVay. And this may very well be a Super Bowl preview. The Chiefs are desperate for a win here to keep space between themselves and the New England Patriots, and themselves, the San Diego Chargers, now the LA Chargers, and themselves and the Pittsburgh Steelers to remain the number one seed in the AFC playoffs. Boy, it's way different for them to have everybody come into Arrowhead versus having to go on the road. And same thing with the Rams. They are chasing down the New Orleans Saints, who have now the head-to-head win, but they both have one loss. So this is an enormous game. Honestly, winner of this game may very well, because of it, get home field advantage throughout the playoffs and a road to the Super Bowl. Loser of this game may very well have to go on the road in the postseason in January. This is huge. And it'll be played in Mexico City. This is a Super Bowl preview. Arguably the biggest regular season game we will have this year. Rams-Saints was in that conversation. Patriots-Chiefs in that conversation. But Rams-Chiefs may very well be. We'll have Patriots and Steelers coming up here. But this may very well be the biggest game of the NFL season. Play to Mexico City. The Rams gave up a home game for the NFL to get its rocks by going on the road and sending another team somewhere else to expand the brand. Look, I've got nothing against the country of Mexico because there are plenty of good NFL fans there. Great NFL fans, in fact. But this is about the competitive balance and having marquee games played on this, in this league at your normal home sites, which is why I hate NFL Europe. I hate the NFL pushing games to London. You only get 16 of these things. You only get 8 home games that matter. And Jaguars fans couldn't even get the Eagles game in their home stadium. That game, goodbye, sold to London. The Chiefs, routinely, one of the best, if not the best, fan bases in sport. As I've said before, going to Arrowhead is a spiritual, religious experience. It is one of the great sports experiences of my lifetime. And a couple of years ago, Clark Hunt, because he's on this international committee, said, yeah, we'll play a Chiefs home game in London. They could sell out Arrowhead, drop of a hat. But they don't care about the fans here. So if you're a Rams fan, don't you think you'd kind of want to see the Chiefs come to town? Wouldn't this be one of the games you'd want to go to? But no, they sold this to Mexico City to expand the brand. And so on top of this, you have got a field that is not ready for football. The league has worries about the playing surface at Azteca Stadium. There's significant concerns as they are working closely with the field manager at Azteca to ensure a quality surface. There is soccer and concerts that's played constantly this time of year. And obviously it's not the middle of the summer, so you can dry it out. It's wet. It's ground up. It's been played on a million times. It's a soccer field, and it's a disaster. And guess what we're at risk at? Not only do we not have a real home field advantage one way or the other with one of the biggest games of the NFL season, not only is potentially home field advantage throughout the playoffs on the line for both of these teams, and you're playing at a neutral site soccer stadium, but this on top of everything. Todd Gurley, Jared Goff, Pat Mahomes, Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, Brandon Cooks, go down the list. Those guys, Aaron Donald, go down the list. Those guys are now at risk of blowing out an ACL, ruining an ankle, getting injured because they're playing on a surface that is not ready for NFL football. They're playing at a stadium that is hosting one game. It's so problematic. So problematic. All of this. And the NFL serves them right because they have squeezed every last drop of blood out of this rock, which is expand the brand, expand the brand. Next year, there's going to be four NFL games in London. Four! Expand the brand, expand the brand. As though the brand needs to be expanded. I don't know. I look around. Are you not doing well enough here? I see full stadiums. I see ratings up yet again. I see television contracts ballooning. I don't see the price of jerseys going down, so you must be doing okay there. I don't see the price of tickets going down. I don't see the price of parking going down, so you must be doing okay here. Maybe I'm just blind, but am I missing a bunch of deals for the American consumer because they're doing so poorly here they need to expand the brand? Of course not! The biggest game of the NFL season is being played in a field that they are scared about the safety of. Cool. Nice. I mean, why would we play this in beautiful Los Angeles? Why would we play this at Arrowhead Stadium? Why? I mean, why not play it at Azteca Stadium, Mexico City? By the way, Mraz, what's the timing of this where the Rams can't fly home after the game?
So, customs at LAX closes at 12:30 a.m. Pacific nightly. And because of the timing in which the game ends, plus flight time by the time the Rams would get to the flight, they would not land at LAX by 12:30 a.m. Pacific, where if they were flying anywhere else in the country, they wouldn't have to go through the customs. Therefore, LAX is making no exception, and the Rams have to spend one extra night in Mexico City, which players are not happy about, and fly out the next morning just to be able to get through customs.
This is incredible. Now, my heart goes out to everybody in California who is dealing with these wildfires, the campfire. The Rams had the week from hell last week because they had the shooting at Thousand Oaks that obviously rattled them. That was 4 miles away from their practice facility. Plus, they're getting evacuated from their homes. Their families are in peril. They're getting moved from hotel to hotel to hotel because of the encroaching wildfires. I mean, it was really an awful week for the Rams. So now you add on top of this, let's have them play at a soccer stadium where the field might not be up to par, that there's severe concerns about the safety hazard of playing there, and because of customs, they can't come back home that night. This is just so ludicrous, and this is the NFL and why I hate the decision makers of the NFL. It is always about the bottom dollar to them. It is never about doing the right thing for us or the consumer. The right thing for the consumer is preseason games that we don't want to watch anyway because we don't want to pay regular season prices for exhibition football should be the ones they send to London, the ones they send to Mexico City. Those should be the games if they want to expand the brand. But the English Premier League doesn't play Man City versus Man U at MetLife Stadium. They don't play Liverpool against Arsenal at Soldier Field. They don't sell off their best games regular season to America. Why? Because they are completely loyal to their consumers, knowing that they cannot get away with that. And we let the NFL get away with this because we bow down to capitalism. Because as a country, we are always saying, hey, make your buck. Get the most out of it. Be a great capitalist. And because that is internally coursing through our American DNA, we let our leagues get away with murder. These logos on NBA jerseys are so stupid. They are so ugly and so stupid. But, hey, got to get yours. As though NBA franchises, I mean, Steve Ballmer buys the Clippers. They're worth two, at the time, he buys them for a $2 billion. He was asked if he was to sell it now, what would he sell it for? He said it would probably have to be four. He made $2 billion on a $2 billion investment in like 5 years. And he needs some type of app or startup tech on the jersey to make a few extra mil?
Pretty sure there's his Bumble, too.
It's incredible what we allow these owners to get away with because we believe in capitalism so desperately. Hey, get yours. Get rich. Hey, you got every right to. And so we stand by as the NFL owners sell off our best games. The Rams and the Chiefs is maybe the best game of the season. We stand by and accept it because, well, hey, man, NFL's got to get theirs. Capitalism. Expand the brand, DA. What's wrong with expanding the brand? I'll tell you what. It's the best game of the season. It's being played on slop in a soccer stadium across borders where the Rams can't come back because of customs. This is so stupid.
Don't forget, too, that the Rams asked the NFL, knowing that they had to play the Broncos this year, can we play them this past weekend so we could be in the Mile High City, get used to the altitude before doing you the favor of going to Mexico? And the league said no. So they're living this week, I think, at the Air Force Academy to train in the altitude before going to Mexico City.
And the league said yes to the Patriots being able to do that last year.
The NFL's incredible. Just incredible. It is incredible. By the way, Cooper Kupp just ripped up his ACL on a regular football field. The NFL better pray to the heavens, whatever God they pray to, that Jared Goff or Patrick Mahomes or Todd Gurley or Kareem Hunt does not rip an ACL on this game because of the field. They better pray to the heavens, because couldn't you just see this ridiculous Fercocta experiment of expanding the NFL, go to Mexico City, the field being garbage, and Patrick Mahomes ripping his ACL, and then suddenly the Chiefs' chances go kablooey. You could just see it happening. It better not happen. The NFL is such a bunch of crooks. And we let it happen. Capitalism, man. American capitalism. That's what we're built on.
Or do we sacrifice one of these young men so that they never play these stupid games again in the future? Do you, not that you root for it.
They'll never stop.
But would the NFL even be smart enough post Mahomes torn ACL to stop these games?
They'll never stop because these owners cannot stop watching the dial go around with how many dollars they're making. They can't stop. They are so intoxicated by, let's raise the revenue. I mean, we all know Roger Goodell is a bum of a commissioner, and he simply keeps telling them, I will get you to $25 billion revenue in a year. That is my goal. The goal is not loyalty, consumer confidence. The goal is not legacy or lineage or tradition. The goal is not integrity or morality. He has told them the goal is $25 billion a year. I'll get you there. They don't care about anything else, and we let them. When we come back here on the show, Trash Tuesday, as though that was not just a trash. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Too much fun with audio.
Google. Yahoo. Facebook. Twitter.
It's so dumb. It's so dumb.
The DA Show on CBS Sports Radio.
43 minutes past the hour. Thanks for being with us. DA with you here on CBS Sports Radio. Check it out. PGP Plus is available. If you heard Thursday's, you like that big boy mystery woman revealed. We have a complete breakdown and analysis with her on the PGP Plus, the first ever double PGP week in DA Show history. It's available on iTunes. Check it out there. Also available on our website, daoncbs.com. And our toll-free line is brought to you by Geico. Great news. Quick way you could save money switching to Geico. Go to geico.com. 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Coming up in 15 minutes from now, Tommy Bowden's going to join us. Let's talk college football playoff. New rankings will come out tonight. Probably not much change, but we'll have to preview Notre Dame's biggest challenge of the season since Michigan in the opener, and that's against Syracuse at Yankee Stadium coming up on Saturday. And then also look ahead to Michigan-Ohio State in a couple of weeks and how this entire playoff picture will unfold. And that will be with Tommy Bowden, former, of course, head coach in college football, analyst now. He'll drop on by the show at the top of the hour. But it is a Trash Tuesday.
So what's eating you?
People that get in the left lane and drive the speed limit.
I gotta trash the NFL, man.
Trash my ex-girlfriend.
You want me to trash that?
Trash Tuesday, my favorite day of the week, not for nothing.
Time to vent. We take it out like the trash. It's Trash Tuesday.
All right, Mraz, lead us off. Who are you trashing?
Okay, I promise this is not political based at all, but I have to trash the "Hey, I voted" people on Facebook last week. I mean, great. You absolutely should vote. That is your duty and everything. But my social media was inundated. And you want to put a cool picture with the sticker on? That's fine. I don't care about a simple sentence, "I voted," with
Did
an exclamation
vote?
Point. No. However.
I know that was coming.
I was away, and I wasn't going through the whole absentee thing because I was going away. I think it's great when people vote. What I don't need is everybody on Facebook just putting "I voted" with an exclamation point. Great. That, to me, is as bad as you think it with the dog pictures. Enough's enough. You should vote. It's your American duty. I don't need Twitter, Instagram, Facebook filled with just "I voted." Who cares? Give me some meat on the bone here.
Beep, beep. Sanitation just arrived.
Well, it's become one of those things where in America, social media now drives everything. So anything you do, you feel is so relevant that you must share it. Everything. And so this is a little thing where you get a little sticker and you kind of can feel good about yourself. And so, yes, it is totally self-indulgent. It's just, it's the same thing with Pete has blasted the first day of school, people that have put that out there. I blasted the dog pictures, the baby pictures.
But see, I don't even mind a picture with the sticker. I actually find fun. Look, I got a sticker. Like, all right, you're going for that. You're laughing. How about the people don't post pictures and literally just write "I voted"? Like, I saw that a million times on Facebook. Who cares? Who cares that you voted? Text your inner circle that you voted and have a discussion on who you voted with. I don't care that you're just writing "I voted" on Facebook. Get them out.
Get them out.
Had you not been away, would you have voted?
I would have. Yes, I would have. I actually would have.
Pete the Body Bellotti, who are you trashing?
I'm going to have my piece on the end zone celebration thing and how the NFL's butchered that whole thing.
Okay.
So let's start with the beginning when end zone celebrations were cool and people were, you know, people did it every so often, the icky shuffle, all that. And then the NFL decided, oh, we can't have that anymore. It's too much. Get it out. Enough with the end zone dancing, which they blew. And then now they're doing a complete 180 on it and saying, all right, let's have end zone celebrations. Now everyone does it for everything. And especially last night, Odell Beckham Jr., they go down 3. He's celebrating a touchdown in the end zone. I mean, come on. The Giants are 1-7, and he's dancing around in the end zone. I mean, this is something that's just so idiotic. Get it the hell out.
Trash Tuesday is fun for everyone.
Get it the hell out. I think that they've become over-choreographed as well. You know, I know that the NFL wants to bring some fun back to the end zones and the celebrations, and I understand that. But when you orchestrate something with your entire team, it just seems like it's overdone. It's not organic anymore.
If I see one more team go down like fake bowling pins being bowled on, I am going to lose my mind. I'm with Pete on this.
Yeah, it's not really unique. It feels like it's gone so far one way that it's not really fun and unique anymore. I don't know. I guess the salute to service was kind of a cool one by the Eagles the other day.
I mean, the Seahawks staged a baseball brawl. Then did some weird wide receiver dance where they separated and one guy came down the middle. I'm all in. I'll take the crap to get the good stuff.
Is there any good stuff anymore?
Yeah, I just gave you two examples.
I didn't like the baseball fight.
How would you not like the baseball fight?
It was lame.
No, it wasn't.
I didn't really like
it. Ever see it before? No. Well executed? Yes. Loved it.
The dance routine I did kind of like.
Oh, there you go. So we're one for two.
Everyone's trying too hard. That's the problem. I mean, now we can all celebrate. No. Meanwhile, the NFL didn't want any part of it.
This is the NFL's evil plan. They want you to get sick of celebrations. It's like the dad who catches you drinking and makes you drink a whole 12-pack till you pass out. They want the fans turning on celebrations.
So that they can then ban them again?
Yes, yeah, yeah. So they can turn around. Look, nobody wants them. We're sick of them. We're tired of them. That's their plan.
Andrew Bogish, who are you trashing?
Well, DA, speaking of social media inundation, a lot of pictures last night on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook of your little get-together at Iona, courtesy of Joe D. And I've spent now the last 24 hours figuring out who specifically to trash in this. Is it Joe D for inviting Sean and not anyone else of the multitudes of people who were more qualified to speak alongside you and Maggie last night at Iona College here in the New York City area? Or do we trash Sean for being Sean and going there and not even attempting to iron a shirt? Or did you button another button? Or was your chest still hanging out when you got there? How did that work?
I buttoned it.
Okay, so at least you did that for the kids and the teachers who apparently want to have new jobs in the broadcasting industry. But I ended up being back on Joe D, and I understand the connection. Him and you are good friends. You work together. You are entertaining. But, like, couldn't Joe D even get, like, Zach Gelb? I mean, Zach's at least allowed to host on weekdays and non-holidays. So he's, like, a whole step ahead of Sean when it comes to being on the air. So, like, what? You were there. What could he possibly have said? Like, here's how you can scam a grand at a boomer by gargling some dirty drink, you know, water from the kitchen?
Well,
what was the moral? What was the point?
It was really interesting because Mraz actually was very good up there on the podium. He was very good because he was very honest and transparent that he lucked into everything, didn't work very hard.
Okay.
Can't believe how lazy he is. He kind of came with all of those things. And so that was very endearing, but it also totally called into question why he should be up there in the first place.
All right. At least he played it well.
Hold your nose. That's some smelly rubbish.
We need to get Joe D on this morning to talk about the thought process behind putting myself, Maggie Gray, and then Mraz up on a career podium for young students and young minds. And again, Mraz continually said, one of the interesting stories I never even heard was that Mraz's first internship at a cable station on Long Island, he openly quit because he just wasn't having fun. And that he actually looked back and regrets it because he took the spot of somebody else more deserving that would have actually worked hard. So he's now admitting that he just quits on things, doesn't work hard, takes other people's opportunities. And this is what he is telling young people looking to get in the business.
I'm such a crap producer. You know that? just a role model here. That's all I am.
I'm not prepared for you having an adult thought and, like, adult feelings on something.
You're more like Charles Barkley in that Nike commercial. I'm not a role model. Do not do what I do. I am trashing, and this is really no fault, I suppose, but I'm trashing whatever I drove over just outside the Atlanta Hartsfield International Airport that forced me to get a flat 5 miles outside of the airport. We all fly down to Atlanta, me and four buddies, to go to this Auburn and Georgia game in Athens. Fly down there. Everybody is delayed. There's weather problems in the area. Everybody has gotten up really early and fought traffic just to get down there. Finally, we all get together. We finally get to the rental center. We finally get the rental car. We drive it. Okay. Exhale. Boom. What was that? It's raining. I got to pull over the side of the highway, and I'm 5 miles away from the airport. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. So I'm sitting on the side of the highway. We're trying to call the rental car company and AAA. Whose responsibility is this? Is this my responsibility? Is this the rental car responsibility? They said, we can come. We can't change it. We can only tow you. I said, well, if I can change it, what happens? You got to come back here, get a new car. And it's a whole thing. So my entire trip was delayed by like 2 hours of travel delays getting in. And then another 3 hours changing a... We ended up changing the tire on the side of the road under an overpass with semis rolling by and rain coming down 5 miles from the airport. It was so dispiriting. It was like, wow, you just took all of my hopes and dreams and crushed them up and then threw them into the ocean and made me watch it.
Let's face it. That's straight trash.
Thankfully, there was Pit Boss Barbecue. That was my redemption, where the chopped brisket was absolutely amazing. The ribs to die for. And it had a cartoon pig spray painted the side of the building, so I knew it was going to be good. And the menu was handwritten, hanging over top of the counter. That's when you know it's good. When we come back, Tommy Bowden, college football analyst, on how the playoff standings are going to look coming up tonight. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.